Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Church Answers.
So we've had two discussions the last two podcasts. We talked about my generation dying.
Yes.
Dropping like flies. Right. And then you just said, this is an opportunity to rebut my reputation as a church mortician.
Yes. Churchmortician.com, by the way.
Churchmortician.com goes to TomRainer.com. Only you would have done that.
Yes.
The only reason I have a reputation for that is because I wrote a book called Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and I've written a few blog posts about dying churches and a few podcasts about struggling churches. Mm-hmm. But mainly because you won't stop talking about me as a church mortician.
No, I'm not the cause. I'm the effect.
You are the precipitator and the exaggerator. Because
maybe so.
But this particular podcast, we're going to talk about the healthy church. And
you used to talk about healthy churches, you know, and your books, they were all about healthy churches. And then they started talking about dying churches.
Yeah. You know what I felt like? I felt like churches needed a wake-up call. And so we went through a season of the wake-up call, but you know, I got a new book out called Scrappy Church.
Mm-hmm. And positive book.
It is a positive book about what churches can do. And it's not that I'm going to go away from defining reality. I'm not going to be the metaphorical ostrich with my head in the sand. But I am going to be talking more and more about church health and church revitalization in the future.
Because we've seen churches heed the wake-up call.
Yeah, exactly right. Think of Mike Rubino, Long Island.
Uh-huh.
And the wake-up call he had, he thought he could turn that church around in his own power.
Nope.
It's a great story.
Yep.
Fantastic story. One of our leaders at Revitalize Network. As always, thank you, William Vanderblumen and Vanderblumen Search Group, for being our longest-standing sponsor.
Yeah, Vanderblumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. You can find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
Okay, let's get into what was originally a blog post that got a lot of traffic, a lot of response, for which I'm very grateful, because what we're finding is people are interested in church health as much as they're interested in church sickness and church death.
Yes, and the seven traits of a healthy church. Number one is they truly believe in the power of the gospel.
We just talked about Mike Rubino, Long Island, church name.
Cornerstone
Bible Church, I believe is the name of it. And Mike, one of his earlier statements about not turning the church around when he first got there was this: he believed that he could do it. He had a confidence in self, which is good to a degree, but ultimately he had to turn it over to God. He had to say, I cannot do this turnaround in my own power. The power is in the gospel. And we make this comment, most people would affirm or believe, say they believe in the power of the gospel, but not a lot of them act out of that belief. It's kind of like saying, you've seen the illustration many, many times where the parents, they say the parent tells the child, jump and I'll catch you. You've heard that illustration many times. It's the same thing. I believe you love me. I believe you'll catch me, but heck no, I'm not jumping. You know, my illustration, I actually jumped off a roof.
And they didn't catch you.
And my dad turned his head and let me drop right onto the ground. Fortunately, a low-hanging roof, and I was not permanently scarred, but I'm still telling the story 53 years later,55 years later, from 8 years old to 63 years old. So it did have an impact on me. Double entendre.
Hey.
Double entendre.
You had an impact on the ground.
Yes, I did. So for most churches, believing in the power of the gospel is lip service. Yeah, we believe in Jesus. We believe in God. Do you really believe in the power of the gospel so much that you're willing to act upon it? Do you believe that if you share the gospel with someone that the Holy Spirit will work? Do you believe that if you have an outward focus that God is going to be in it? Do you believe that in the midst of difficult situations, God can get you out of it? Do you really believe enough that you can act on it? So this is not merely a cognitive assent that, yeah, we believe in the power of the gospel and we believe that God can do it. This is a willingness then to take the risk because you believe. I mean, think about Joshua. Of course, we'll talk about courageous leaders in just a moment. But think about Joshua. about to lead the Jews after 40 years in the wilderness, Sinai Peninsula, about to cross the Jordan to go into the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, okay, it's the highest level the river has been.
Yeah.
It's overflowing.
I read that a couple days ago.
It's overflowing the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling us that the waters are going to part and we're going to walk across.
And they did.
And they did. But you know what I would have wanted to be? Near the front.
I'm going to cross here quick just in case something starts leaking on the backside.
Yeah. I just wondered who was on the back row back there. You know, said
the ones with the most faith.
I guess, you know, that's a good point. Ones with the most faith. Exactly. So it was not that they believed in the power of God just in their minds. They believed in the power of God with the willingness to step out. Yeah. And they stepped into the dry banks.
It wasn't just in their attitudes, but in their action as well.
There you go.
All right. Number two. They have courageous leaders, kind of touched on
that. And that's what I call them, Joshua leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to take risk. They're up for the challenge because they know that God is up for the challenge. Here is a corollary characteristic of a Joshua leader. They are not in a false humanistic kind of way, but in a God way, they are optimistic. They embrace the reality that God can do it. And when people want to be around them because they believe that that person believes that we're going to do whatever is God wants us to do. And so when I say that they're courageous leaders, they are courageous leaders that are effusive in their optimism because they believe in the power of the gospel. These leaders are willing to step out not on chance, but on faith. Because they've seen God do it again and again and again. So the non-courageous leaders, I'm hesitant to call them cowardly. Let's put them somewhere in the middle. But those that aren't the courageous leaders, they're not going to see healthy churches because they're afraid to take the steps of faith. Steps of faith are necessary in order to see what God would do. Steps of humans are necessary to see what man can do.
All right. Of pastors, what percent fall into what you would define as courageous leaders?
Again, that's going to be highly subjective, okay?
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be around 10%.
Wow.
And the reason that I would say that is that matches the quantitative reality we're seeing in most churches today. If you look at the healthiest churches, truly healthy churches, it's about 10% are truly healthy. 35% are growing, but 10% are truly healthy. So if you correlate those two together, it's not always a one-to-one correlation. It's possible to have a courageous leader in a dying church.
Well, and it's also possible to have a coward in a growing church.
The demographics are just, you know, all over the place, and you can't help but grow. I get that. But overall, I would say about 1 out of 10. Now, here is where I kind of get excited. Let's talk about Revitalized Network, the nonprofit, right, for just a moment. Here is what I see as a real possibility, particularly in the North American church. I believe that about one third of all churches can turn around.
Yes.
Okay. I really do believe that with just a little bit of guidance and a little bit of hope and just a little bit of push, I believe one third of all churches in need of revitalization can turn around. I think one third will be willing to be acquired by healthy churches. Now think about that for a moment. 350,000 churches, and I just named, according to my calculation, 240,000, maybe 238,000 churches that could be acquired or turned around. What will happen to the rest? They'll decline and die. But two-thirds of those that need revitalization will probably be revitalized. I really believe that that can happen. And that's why I think this 10% number can change to 33% and actually be more like two-thirds instead of one-third,
mm-hmm,
because they're going to be acquired by churches with courageous leaders.
And these courageous leaders also embrace change.
There were three words that I said at Lifeway during my entire tenure again and again: change or die. And I was talking from a corporate business reality, but also from a ministry perspective as well. If we don't change, we will die. I was talking to Joe Walker, the chief financial officer of Lifeway, and he was showing me all of the changes that we had made and the dollar amounts that were associated with those.
Whoa.
And he said, "Dr. Rainer, if we had not done these things right here, we'd be dead today."
Really?
Yes.
Oh, so there were the dollar amounts that it changed the budget.
Yes, it changed the budget.
Gotcha.
I'm not going to get into all that financial and competitive information, but he said we would not be here today if we had not made courageous changes. If we had not changed, we would have died. And so that's an example. Of course, that's kind of pointing to me in a self-serving way as a courageous leader. And that is not the intent. My point is this, that it required change. It required a whole team of people, 5,000 strong, to be willing to make those changes, mm-hmm. because there are a lot of our employees have seen a lot of changes. Well, those things can happen in churches as yeah. well. And well, I see it happening.
And I think we also see time to time, we see churches where the leaders know what needs to change
mm-hmm.
and either won't do it or can't figure out how to do it.
Exactly. They won't do it. They don't know how to do it, or they do know how to do it and they lack the courage. That would be the third.
Yeah.
And any of those three. So they won't do it. Can't do anything about those who won't.
No.
Okay. They don't have the knowledge. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
This is what we're trying Church to resource. Answers. Church Answers, Revitalize Network. That's what we're trying to do. And then they lack the courage. I think sometimes you can provide resources that give people hope and courage that you would not have normally had. So they do embrace change. Big one, big one.
All right, number four. And I think this has to go with – this ties straight to the embracing the change. They're not nostalgic. They're looking forward, not backward.
I was talking to Brad Wagner, Executive Vice President of Lifeway, and we were talking about all the changes that have been taking place in Lifeway, church life. I said, how does that affect you? Because he's only 2 years younger than I am. He's 61 years old. He said, you know, I don't know what it is. He said, maybe it's just a gift God has given me. He said, but I never look in the rearview mirror. I always look through the windshield. And he says, I'm always looking forward. I just don't worry about the way we have been and what's going to happen because I'm always looking forward. Well, that is a guy that is not nostalgic. Now, not having nostalgia does not mean you don't embrace the past in a way that is honoring. It does not mean that you forget those who have come before you. It does not mean that you fail to say that you stood on the shoulders of giants. By the way, did you know that that was my first comment as president of Lifeway?
Standing on the shoulders of giants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I think I do remember that.
Right after I was elected, first thing, I stood up. I said, that's one small step. No, somebody else who said something.
That was somebody else.
I stand on the shoulders of giants. Yeah.
I read that press release recently. I do remember that.
Wow, you are getting nostalgic to read that press release. What I was thinking about more than any one person was really James Marion Frost, because yeah. I had studied the history of Lifeway. And that first president not only was a innovator, not only was a great businessman and a theologian, he was a courageous leader. Mm-hmm. And he's the shoulders upon which the rest of us have stood on.
Is there a good book on Frost?
No.
I mean, I know we got the Lifeway Legacy book that tells a little bit about him. But
yeah, somebody needs – you know, the thing about it is the reading audience for a book on about
four people.
James
– two of them are in this room.
Yeah, I would love to
– not even Amy would read that book.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Amy would.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But Amy would.
Amy would not. So, but I knew James Marion Frost, and I did not want his legacy forgotten because he was such an incredible leader. And he was not nostalgic. You know, he quit one time.
Yeah.
He said, okay, my time is past. Yeah. And then the Baptist Sunday School Board, the predecessor to Lifeway, started sinking. and Frost, they said, Frost, will you come back? Okay.
So if things don't work out in the next couple...
No, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't
even. You saw where that was going, didn't you? You saw the twinkle in my eye.
I saw the twinkle in your eye and the smirk on your lips. And
you knew where I was going.
Neither one was going to work for me.
Oh, man.
Nostalgia in its healthy sense is good. Nostalgia where you cannot move forward is paralyzing.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to many leaders.
Well, and speaking of you here at Lifeway, number five, I really think you've helped us with this. They see reality. You have been very clear through your leadership at Lifeway about helping the people, the leadership, the employees see reality and not hiding that from us and not hiding it from the denomination as well. So
exactly.
That can't be said of all churches or institutions.
This sounds like plug something day, promote something day. We have this resource that's just about to be released, just a very new resource called Revitalize Bundle.
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose of Revitalize Bundle is to do three things for a leader who wants to revitalize his church. One, to help you know yourself, emotional intelligence. And there's a way that we train you to take assessments and to know yourself. Two, to know your church. You think you know your church, but survey what the people are thinking about your church. And three, to know your community. So if you know yourself, you know your church, you know your community, It does not guarantee that there will be revitalization, but you're almost guaranteed not to see your church revitalized without all three of those. All three of those, Jonathan, are about reality.
Yes.
Seeing reality about yourself, seeing reality about your church, and seeing reality about your community. Without those three, revitalization is next to impossible.
It is, and you will not be a happy church, a healthy church.
Healthy church. Healthy.
If you don't face reality.
Churchmortician.com, not healthy church.
Because if you're not facing reality as a church, you're not going to be going. You're not going to do what needs to be done, right?
There's no motivation for change if you don't see the need for change. Yeah. Or our reality.
Or you'll be doing things that don't matter or don't have anything to do with the health of the church.
Yep.
All right, number six. They intentionally intersect their lives with non-Christians. This is intentional evangelism.
Yeah, that word intentional is huge. Everybody likes the theory of evangelism.
Yep.
Very few do the application of evangelism. In fact, if I look at my life in the course of a given day, I would put myself in the latter category more often than I'd put myself in the former category. I like the theory of evangelism. I'm more likely to embrace the theory than I am to do evangelism, to be active in it. And so healthy churches are intentional about their members intersecting lives with non-Christians. Now, what does that mean? That means you can't keep your church members so busy doing meaningless things that they don't have time to interact with the world.
Could have an outward focus.
At an outward focus, exactly. And so we have many churches that are busy doing business, mm-hmm. but not busy doing the business of the gospel and reaching beyond itself.
Yeah, it reminds me of the podcast we had with Dean and Sarah.
Yeah.
Where he talked about why they don't have, you know, church league this or whatever. He wants his people to be in the lives of those not in the church, not engaged in faith, not, you know, non-believers, basically.
Yes.
He wants them engaged with them. He doesn't want them, you know, just in holy huddles all day long.
And I was in a church, this is my St. Petersburg church, mm-hmm. that had a softball team that was all church members.
Yeah.
And they did not want to change. So I was able to find four or five others that wanted a softball team that didn't have the requisite, at least nine, you probably know, 10, and you probably needed 15 or 20 for those who were not there. And I said, would y'all do me a favor and just go out and recruit people who aren't in church? So we basically had the church team and the unchurched team. That's where the cover story of my friend Akeem Abdul-Morella.
Yep. Scrappy Church dedicated to him. It's good to see him recently.
Yeah.
Swung by.
Yeah. He shows up at the most unexpected times. But he's a great guy. I can't tell you what he means to me. Just an incredible guy. So we had a softball team that was highly intentional, at least as an inception. You know what happened? Almost everybody on the team became a believer, and it became an inwardly focused team.
But then you got to start another team.
We should have started another team, but then I left the church. And my primary evangelist was Akeem, and he had to move elsewhere. So that was another issue in itself.
All right. And finally, they accept responsibility. Don't play the blame game.
Boy, do we hear that. It's the denomination's fault.
Oh, yeah.
It's the community's fault. Mm-hmm. They know we're here. Why don't they show up?
The community changed. We didn't.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
It's not your
And then sometimes it's the pastor's fault. That's what we pay the pastor and staff for. They're supposed to be doing it. They're on the payroll to be doing this. And sometimes it's their fault. I hear pastors say this quite a bit. Hey, you know what? I'm glad you preached that sermon, but I sure wish such and such had been here to hear it. Everybody thinks that it's somebody else's problem. The healthiest churches have leaders and church members who are accepting responsibility. Shameless plug, but this is one of the reasons why I wrote the book, I Am a Church Member, mm-hmm. and its sequel, I Will, because it was all about accepting responsibility. In fact, in the commitment in I Am a Church Member, you say, I will accept responsibility, or maybe that's in I Will. And anyway, it's in one of the two books. So when it's all said and done, healthy churches have leaders and church members who say the Great Commission is our responsibility. We won't. I'm just thinking about it. I got fussed at by a pastor who was saying I was not doing enough for him.
Oh,
and just complaining.
It's all about him.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say it, but my reaction internally was, go out and share the gospel and, you know, see what you can do, see what God can do through one person. But I didn't. I tried to be nice. But
okay.
Okay, Jonathan, 7 traits of a healthy church, and I think these are good ones.
Yeah, you know what is a healthy seminary?
Midwestern. Kansas City.
That is correct. They offer a 81-hour MDiv that gives you a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, giving you everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. Start your ministry training today at mbts.edu/mdiv. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I wrote a blog post a few weeks ago, talked about entitled church members.
Mm.
This is the opposite of the healthy church. Read the entitled church member, compare and contrast it to the healthy church, and you'll get a picture why the 90% are not doing well, but the 10% are.
Yeah.
Let's see more of the 10% and see what great things God will do.
All right. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app, and join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.